Okay, Boker Tov, everybody. It's 11 o'clock. I hope everybody is doing well and most importantly is healthy. And if we have to socially distance from each other, at least we can learn online. And we should, please God, as we enter the month of Nisan, the Geula B'Nisan, Nigalu B'Nisan, Atidin Legel, we need a Geula from the present, you know, situation. I want to welcome, it's a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Adler, Rabbi Aaron Adler, who we had the pleasure of hosting in Toronto just a few months ago. Rabbi Adler grew up in New York, served as the assistant of Rav Soloveitchik for many years. I made Aliyah already in 1979, has been a Rav in Yerushalayim, in Ramat for a long time. He currently serves as the Rav of the Ol Nechama Synagogue in Katamon. He was founder of the Ner David, Ner Tamid Yeshiva High School in Chashmonaim, very involved, he taught at Bar Ilan, very accomplished, and very proud of his wonderful children, as I've learned over the time, and it's really a pleasure to welcome you. And Vakasha, if anybody has any questions, you can, I would put the questions in the chat box, or if Rabbi Adler wants to stop at some point and you'd like to speak up, you can do that, but you can put the questions in the chat box, and then we can get to them towards the end of the class. And without further ado, I want to Rabbi Adler, and as you know, we have these classes every day, and follow the schedule, and Bakasha, Rabbi.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Kelman, and kol hakavod to you for the entire program of Torah in Motion, and specifically the online learning that's going on, as we're all quasi-isolation, and some of us actually in isolation. As this broadcast begins, I just got off the air with a tefillah, international tefillah get-together for Tillim that's being said right now, and leading up to the Yom Kippur Katan Mincha that's going to go on in various places in Eretz Yisrael. From this moment on, 5 p.m. Israel time, we are in semi-lockdown, where the chief rabbinate has actually ordained formally that the shuls, the Bate Knesset, should be closed, and people are going to be davening on their own. But thanks to the assistance of the technological advances of the day, we can bring people together for a Tillim rally online, and this is exactly what's going on. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu should listen to all of our tefillot, and the Mirz Hashem, we can look ahead to a much brighter few months ahead, and we'll see this whole coronavirus as an episode, a difficult episode, but behind us, and God willing, it should be sooner than later. The topic today, as we are on Erev Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and here in Eretz Yisrael, in about an hour and a half's time, it will be already Rosh Chodesh Nisan, seems a little bit awkward and peculiar. With regard to matzah and maror, there's nothing awkward about that at all. But roller coaster rides usually remind me of all kinds of, going back to my early school age, recreation parks and so on. There are some children love the roller coasters, and some absolutely hated the roller coasters. In a conversation earlier today on the email, Rabbi Kelman told me that he was not a big fan of the roller coasters growing up. And one of the reasons that people abhor the roller coasters is because, number one, you have these sudden curves and the bumps, and mostly the unexpected. Exactly why children enjoy all that? Well, some children enjoy it. They get a lot of kicks and a lot of thrills from the unexpected. But leaving the recreation parks aside, the truth of the matter is that Seder night is somewhat of a reenactment of Jewish history. And to a large degree, Jewish history is nothing but a historic roller coaster with curves, with bumps, and certainly the unexpected. Tonight, here in Rosh Chodesh Nisan, we begin anew annually the roller coaster calendar. The calendar seems to be very, very much in place. For, I would say, almost 1,800 years, it's already in place. We do not have the visual sighting of the moon, Kiddush HaChodesh, any longer to produce the day and to announce the day as being Rosh Chodesh. Things have been calculated astronomically, put together in calendar fashion with a 19-year cycle, of which 7 of the 19 are leap years. And this calendar was kicked into motion by a grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the editor of the Mishnayot, and it will function until the days of the Yemot HaMashiach, when, God willing, we will be able to reconstitute the Sanhedrin, the Beit Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim, and go back to the method, the original method of visual sighting of the moon, and then a declaration that the day would be Rosh Chodesh. Those who have studied the Mishnayot of Masechet Rosh Hashanah know that there was a tremendous problem of communication in those days of getting the message out to the Jewish communities of Eretz Israel and the world. But today, thank God, we have overcome those obstacles. And I can envision a scenario of the Beit Din having being online, and at 6 in the morning, it would be announced that the day is Rosh Chodesh, and every gabbai and every shul in the, throughout the world will know that it is absolutely Rosh Chodesh. We're going to see that day, God willing. But in the meantime, we have the calendar, and the calendar begins from tonight, from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It is the Rosh Hashanah of the year count. Although from years we begin with Rosh Hashanah in the fall, but it is the Rosh Hashanah for purposes of counting the months. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, Rosh Chodeshim, Rishon Hu Lachem, L'Chodshei Hashanah. Many of our great Jewish thinkers have viewed the moon in terms of its waxing and waning, going from day 1 to day 15, and then somehow, in terms of our observation of the moon, shrinking until the end of the month, representative of Jewish history. And this may sound very, very homiletic, but there was a book written several years ago, 1999, by a British Rav, Rabbi Israel Roll, R-O-L-L. And I'm just going to read just a few lines that is relevant to this idea of Kiddush HaChodesh. The Maharal is a 17th century personality, shows how this model of ashes to redemption is a recurring theme in Jewish history. From the furnace of Egypt, God brought us to Sinai, to Mount Sinai. From the Edict of Haman, we went on to rebuild the second Beit HaMikdash. That is why Jewish people mark time by the moon rather than the sun. The moon waxes and wanes, which reflects the triumphs and declines of Jewish history. The Medrash states that when Am Yisrael is worthy of God's favor, it is like the waxing moon, the growing moon. When it is not worthy, it is compared to the waning moon in decline. That is why in the blessing of Kiddush Levana, that we ceremoniously say this bracha once a month, usually on the Motzei Shabbat after Rosh Chodesh, but it does not have to be that. And some will say not to say it until at least after the third day of the month. Some say it after the seventh day of the month. According to the Rambam, you can say it already after the first day of the month, the Rosh Chodesh. This is why the blessing of Kiddush Levana, the sanctification of the new moon, this is what Rabbi Roll writes, but I'm going to have to clarify, because we're not involved in sanctification of the new moon per se, but what we do say is, to the moon, he said that it should renew itself as a crown of splendor. And let me just read the original. V'lelavana amar, and to the moon was said, shetitchadesh ateret tiferet la'amusei baten. There should be some type of renewal as a crown of splendor. You know, coronavirus has to do with crowns. The corona is the shape of a crown, and this virus is the shape of a crown, and that's why it's called coronavirus. But we can take that corona, which is a troublesome crown, and make it into a crown of splendor. It's in Am Yisrael's hands. We can do these things. We can convert things that seem to be a big tzara, a big, big affliction, and make it into a moment of radiance. This was already said by the one of the great, great Hasidic leaders, the Rebbe of Ger, in the Svat Emet of Parshat Noach. He says that when the Torah says, Sohar ta'aseh la'teva, you shall make a type of, like a window of sorts, a place that the light would be able to enter, Sohar ta'aseh la'teva, for the ark, so there should be illumination inside for Noach and his family. The word Sohar is the letters Tzadik Hei Resh, but shuffled around, it's the word Tzara, Tzadik Resh Hei. And the word Teva, which we translate as the ark in the context of Parshat Noach, the word Teva in Rabbinic Hebrew is actually the word, and usually relating to the word of Torah. And the Rebbe of Ger in this particular section, he says that the tzaddik, Noach Ish Tzaddik, the tzaddik of each generation, has the capacity of converting the tzara to a tzohar. So what we have to do today is convert the corona to a keter, to a crown, to a crown that would be a crown of splendor and radiating the beauty of Am Yisrael, its relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to God. And this Rabbi Yisrael role continues by quoting our great Rabbi Rav Soloveitchik. He says, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik states, the Jewish people see in the orderly and lawful motion of the moon in its orbit a piece of decline and renewal. Renewal in Hebrew is called hitchatshut, and that's a very, very, very important word. In the spring season, we are involved in hitchatshut. We're renewing nature. Things are happening. Things are beginning to blossom. It's becoming green outside, and so on. Am Yisrael also has a blossoming season, and it's in the season of the month of Nisan. And you know that there's actually a specific bracha for seeing fruit trees begin to the blossoming process after Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Birkat Ilanot. And I can tell you that in my years in Chutz La'aretz, up until 1979, I never made that bracha. I don't remember even hearing about that bracha, even though I actually did study once Masechet Brachot. I do not have recollection of anything practical that had to do with Birkat Ilanot. And the author of the Orach HaShulchan, 19th century Navardak, states that in Chutz La'aretz, the seasons are so different that it never coincided with Nisan anyway, so somehow it just was not practiced. But in Eretz Yisrael today, it's on the agenda, and people starting next week will take a look for trees that have are fruit trees, and to see if the buddings have begun in order to begin making the bracha of Birkat Ilanot. Indeed, there is renewal, there's hitchatshut going on at this season. I'd like to share with you a personal anecdote that somehow, to me personally, the whole idea of hitchatshut, of renewal, became amplified to an unbelievable degree. I live with this till this very day. It's an event that happened 3 years ago. And people in my family remember that 3 years ago, I was out of nowhere struck down with a slip disc. And it was simply a Shabbat morning before going to shul. And I felt a pinch in the back. Next thing I knew, I couldn't walk. It was excruciating pain on my left leg. I just cannot walk. And I can tell you that the fact that on that Shabbat, which was Shabbat Rosh Chodesh Shvat, Parshat Va'era, it was more painful for me not being able to go to shul that Shabbos than the pain in the leg. But I had to deal with it and dealt with it medically. And as one day, about a week and a half later, after some type of treatment, I saw an orthopedic specialist who prescribed for me steroids, which was pretty sharp pills to take at the time. I was there on my own at the Hadassah Hospital in the Mount Scopus. And after the doctor's appointment, I just could not walk home. I could not get on a bus on my own. I hobbled outside the hospital, got into a cab, took it back to my neighborhood in Katamon, and I asked them just to drop me off at the neighborhood pharmacy in my great hope that this pharmacy is going to be able to fill this prescription of the steroid pills. And as it was, thank God, the pharmacy did have the necessary medication, and I was able to purchase immediately all the pills that I needed. There was only one catch. I had to walk home. And walking home, which normally would take me, I would say, approximately 3 minutes, no big deal, not far from my house, it took me about a half an hour to get home, step by step, resting, trying to alleviate the pain mentally. I was trying to do anything I can do. And I come to a street corner where I live, Rehov HaMa'apilim, and I looked up in the sky, and I saw the moon. And I realized I had not yet said Kiddush Levana. Now, Kiddush Levana doesn't have to be said on a specific day. It can be said any time after the third of the month until basically the middle of the month. So there's somewhat of an allowance of time that you can say it even by convenience. I will say parenthetically, in my 40 years in Israel, I've been to Chutz La'aretz many times over. I never said Kiddush Levana in Chutz La'aretz. I'd always made it my business to get back to Eretz Israel within that framework of time. I'd be able to say Kiddush Levana. And now I'm looking at the moon, and I take my smartphone, and I open up the Kiddush Levana, standing on the street, and I say the bracha of Kiddush Levana. And I was overcome by a feeling of renewal, of hitchatshut, of the meaning of what this Kiddush Levana is all about. Rosh Chodesh is bottoming out. You've been in a decline. It's getting worse. And all of a sudden, it bottoms out. Now, you're not out of the woods yet. You're not there yet. There's still a lot of recovery yet to be done. But you know that you're now in an upswing. And you're going to eventually get out of this. I was so overcome by this feeling of hitchatshut, of renewal, that I just fell in love with this mitzvah, Kiddush Levana. People in my family know that sometimes we're just driving in Yerushalayim and I catch the moon from the window of my car and I'll pull over and I'll say Kiddush Levana. The idea of renewal, and this idea of renewal after a decline is very much the theme of the roller coaster effect in Jewish history. We go down, we go up. There is always constantly renewal. Seder night. Seder night for us is an experience that has all to do with decline and renewal. See, once upon a time, the Seder was not exactly the Seder that we do, because when the Beit HaMikdash functioned, people would go to Yerushalayim and have the Pesach sacrifice prepared, and you did not have to do this individually. As a matter of fact, it was never done individually. By families, by groupings, what's called chabura. And you don't have to eat much of the Korban Pesach, just a kezayit's worth. It's not a lot of meat. And this was not even the main part of the menu of the Seder night. It was at the time that we eat the afikoman. So when people today finish their matzah and the maror and their meal, and then they are told that they have to eat another piece of matzah, the only reason we eat it is because it's a mitzvah to eat the afikoman. People don't really eat it with great gusto as a delicacy, another piece of matzah. The Korban Pesach also had to be eaten at the end of the meal, what's called ne'echal al hasova. We're already satiated. And we have to in those days, the Seder night, which included the Korban Pesach, the texts of various parts of the Leila of the Seder night incorporated the idea of the Korban Pesach. For example, the famous Manishtana. Now, this year, there are going to be many people asking the Manishtana very differently. Manishtana Laila Zeh Mikol HaLailot. Why is this year's Seder so different than last year and the year before? Last year and the year before, we sat together with large families. We had neighbors. We had friends. This year, we're still sitting in quarantine with maybe two people, maybe three people, four people, nothing more than that. Very, very, very small company. Manishtana, alayla, zemikol, alaylot. But we know there are the four questions that when I ask many times adult audiences if they can recall the very first Mishnah that they ever studied in their lives, they start scratching their heads and think maybe it's Pirkei Avot, maybe it's Masechet Brachot. Some people go back to sixth grade to maybe a Mishnah in Baba Kama, Baba Metzia. The answer is the first Mishnah every child learns is Manishtana Laila Zemikol HaLailot. It's a Mishnah in Masechet Pesachim. The only thing is the kindergarten teacher tells them that it's a Mishnah. But in the Mishnah of Masechet Pesachim, there's a question that we do not hear at our Seder night. Shebechol ha'leilot anu ochlim basar tzli shaluk u'muvushal. On all nights throughout the year, we eat meat that's potted, that's cooked, that's roasted. Ha'layla hazeh kulot tzli. On the night of Pesach, the meat is only roasted because the Korban Pesach had to be roasted tzli eish. Now, this question doesn't exist today. Rambam, when he presents the Seder night, he's sitting in Egypt, in old Cairo, Fostat, in the 12th century, and fantasizing of the Beit HaMikdash existing, and he presents the Seder as if Beit HaMikdash was up and running. But then, in a half a dozen parenthetical inserts, he says, "But Bazman Hazeh, but today, we don't do this, we do this instead of." And the Rambam tells after the Mishnah, "Balayla hazeh and bemazman hazeh," and in these days, "Eino omer balayla hazeh kulot tzli." We do not say that today, tonight, we are just eating roasted meat. "She'ein lano korban." We don't have the korban. We don't have the korban Pesach, the Pesach sacrifice. So there are adjustments made in the Seder. And that in itself puts a person, dampens somewhat the spirit of the Simcha of the Yom Tov. And if it doesn't, it should dampen the spirit of the Simcha. The Ashkenazim, some at least, have the custom of eating hard-boiled eggs in the salt water at a certain point in the Seder. And that is to remind us of Avelut, of mourning, no different than when mourners return from the cemetery and are served by neighbors, the Sudat Havra'ah. The idea that this is not the real thing. It's watered down. It does not encompass all the aspects of what Seder night is all about because there's no Beit HaMikdash. So even if we're living in the golden ages of Spain, even if we're living in wonderful eras where Jewish communities have autonomy, and Jewish people have the freedom to practice their religion, we know very well that all of these episodes were short-lived. And we say that on Seder night. Shebechol dor vador, umdim aleinu lechaloteinu. every generation, they tried different ways in different places. But we know that Kadosh Baruch Hu has never let us down. Kadosh Baruch Hu matzilenu miadam. God has saved us. But unfortunately, just as Yaakov Avinu, our forefather in Parshat Vayishlach, exits the battle with the angelic figure representing Esav, Yaakov leaves wounded, so Leah al Yerecho, our Chazal teach us, these are the generations of lost souls of Am Yisrael throughout the ages. And there were so many, unfortunately. So it's a somber moment at Seder night. And we are on a roller coaster, going from the highs to the lows to the highs, constantly. When we examine the fundamental mitzvot that we do have today, matzah and maror, they go hand in hand with most probably the most central mitzvah of the night, relating the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Because the Medrash, in the Mechilta Medrash, and we quoted on Seder night, asks, Yachol Me'Rosh Chodesh, perhaps tonight and tomorrow, we should begin the unique mitzvah of talking about the story of the Exodus from Egypt. No, says the Medrash, Talmud Lomar Bayomahu, it's not 2 weeks before Pesach, but it's on Pesach Bayomahu, Yachol Mibod Yom, perhaps it means that in the daytime of Pesach, maybe it means on Erev Pesach when they Pesach in the Beit HaMikdash, says the Mechilta, the Medrash, no, Talmud Lomar Bayomahu, it says Yochol Me'Rosh Chodesh Talmud Lomar Bayomahu, I Bayomahu Yochol Mibot Yom Talmud Lomar Ba'avur Ze Besha'a Shematza Umaror Munachim Lefenecha. The unique mitzvah of relating the story of the Exodus of Egypt is only when the mitzvot, the commandments of Matzah Maror, are right in front of us. And that's only on Seder night. There is an original version of this medrash that reads, "B'sha'ah she'Pesach matza u'maror munachim lefanecha." That Pesach, the Korban Pesach, not the Yom Tov, the Korban Pesach and the matzah and the maror are in front of us. And you know that in the Seder itself, we say that whoever does not explain the mitzvot of Pesach matza u'maror, kol mi shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu bePesach lo yatzai idei chovato. And we go on to explain them. And we say, Korban Pesach, that once upon a time we had in Beit HaMikdash, was for this. Matzah was for that. Maror or the other. And we explain it on Seder night. It's interesting that when the Rambam presented the Beit HaMikdash as if Beit HaMikdash stood, the version was, Pesach ze she'anu ochlim, the reason why we are eating the Korban Pesach, al shem she'pasach ha'makom al-batei avoteinu b'mitzrayim, that God leaped over the homes that we were in Egypt. It's interesting that the Geula, the Exodus, came about when Am Yisrael were quarantined to their homes. Al tetzu ish mi beito. No one left their homes because there was a mashchit. There was something that was damaging outside. And in the Bala Turim, one of the commentators in the Chumash, he writes that just as the first redemption, so the last redemption, something's going to happen that will quarantine Am Yisrael in their homes. I'm not a prophet. I don't know if he, the author of the tour, Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher, in the Middle Ages, had in mind quarantine people because of coronavirus. But I thought it might be an interesting point anyway. So you have Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, and today we have Matzah and Maror, and over the Matzah and Maror, we relate the story of Mitzrayim. Matzah and Maror also can be understood in terms of the roller coaster plan of Jewish history. With regard to Maror, that's going to be a very difficult one to see where's the good. The bad, everybody understands where the bad is. There's plenty of maror throughout Jewish history. But how might maror constitute a moment of good? So maybe perhaps we can bank on a theme that our Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik once said with regard to the Tefillah of Yom Kippur, where on the end of every Shmoneh Esrei of Yom Kippur, we say, Elokai ad shelo notzarti eini kedai, v'achshav shenotzarti ki'ilu lo notzarti. We ask God that we say, look, there's a reason why we weren't born in a different era. The problem is now that we're in this era, we're not sure what we're supposed to do. And we ask God for forgiveness, but we say he should not punish us al yedei yisurim v'chalayim ra'im, with difficult, terrible afflictions. So Rav Soloveitchik asked, every affliction is bad. Did you ever hear of good afflictions? Why does the tefillah emphasize ra'im, bad afflictions? So the Rav said that there are really two different types of afflictions. One is an affliction that one can tolerate. He called it the nuisances of life, the aggravations. He gave a few examples of a person. You're so upset and so on. It's an aggravating moment, no doubt. But one thinks about it, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu had other plans for the person because of a particular sin or sins and let you off the hook because you only missed a bus and you're going to have to wait 15 minutes for the next bus. 15 minutes of aggravation. Are we willing to pay that price? And on Yom Kippur, we tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yes. We're willing to take the aggravations of life and accept them as bona fide punishments for the real McCoy. This is known in the Kabbalistic world as Hamtakat Hadin, sweetening the judgment. Sweetening the judgment is derived in the Sefer HaZohar, the Kabbalistic Zohar, from Abraham Avinu at the Akedah with Yitzhak. Yitzhak symbolizing judgment, midat din, Avraham symbolizing compassion, and midat achesed, and it is Avraham binding the Yitzhak. That is, the midat achesed is binding the midat din. Compassion is overtaking the justice. And this is known as hamtakat din. And to that end, sometimes there could be maror. It's not terribly. Bad. It's bittersweet. It's not good, but it could be a lot worse. And we can actually see maror even in that context. Let me just tell you an interesting anecdote that took place in 1988. We had elections. In Israel, we like to have elections. It seems to be the national sport. President Trump said recently that Israelis like to have elections. The problem is nobody gets elected. We have elections. So in 1988, we had elections for the Knesset. And in that particular election, the religious parties were very fragmented. Not only did the National Religious Party being separated from other religious parties, but within the world of Agudat Yisrael, a more Haredi enterprise, they too were split. At that time, the Litvak, the Lithuanian yeshiva world, pulled out and made their own party called Degel HaTorah, and the Hasidic world, which was led by the Ger Rebbe, and the Lubavitch Rebbe piggybacked on it as well, and that remained as the Aguda party. There was a get-together in Bnei Brak by the Vizhnitzer Rebbe on Shabbat at the end of Suda Shlishit, and he was giving his Hasidim a motivational pep talk to go out to vote on that coming Tuesday. And he said it was a mitzvah to vote. So one chassid asked him, really? It's a mitzvah like eating matzah? So the Rebbe said, no. It's a mitzvah like eating maror. So some people think that going to vote in the Israeli elections is maror. And I will say, halavai, that all the historic maror that Am Yisrael ever received should boil down to going to the elections in the state of Israel for a Jewish government. Halavai, that should be the fate of every maror. But everybody has their definitions of what maror is. So you can have maror, which is absolutely intolerable, and you can have maror, which is perhaps bittersweet, and on some level, relative to worse situations, also looking like somewhat of a salvation of sorts. But then there's the matzah. So what is matzah? Is it there to tell us something about enslavement, or is it there to tell us something about redemption? So the answer is it's both. At the beginning of the Seder, we crack the middle matzah. You put the large part away for the afikoman. The smaller part gets put back between the two whole matzahs. And we say, halach ma'anya, di'achala avotenu b'mitzrayim, avotana b'mitzrayim. This is the bread of affliction. Which means we don't have to wait until we left Egypt to discover this bread called matzah. We knew what matzah was all along. We never got a fresh, roll from Angel's Bakery. That didn't happen. Everything was stale that we ate, and it was cracker-like. So eating the matzah is very much something that will remind us of the shiabud, the enslavement in Egypt. On the other hand, the matzah reminds us of the redemption as well, because the Torah takes the pain to tell us that they baked the matzah in haste as they were leaving Egypt. It became the symbol, almost, of the very, very exodus from Egypt. So where exactly do we do the breaking of the matzah, what we call yachatz? We do it, as I mentioned, fairly early in the Seder. We have Kiddush, Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, and then yachatz. We break the matzah. And after Halach Ma'anya, we fill the second cup, and we continue with the Manashtana. And you continue, until the end of the section of Magid, and that's the bracha of Gaal Yisrael, and we drink the second cup with a Baruch Pe'agafen, we wash, we say Hamon, we say Halachilat Matzah, and we eat the matzah. What's very interesting is there happens to be two opinions as to when to break the matzah. Most authorities, and this is our custom today, is to break the matzah as we do at the very early part of the Seder, before saying Halach Ma'anya. But Rambam, in his presentation of the Seder night, overlooks that moment of Halach Ma'anya and brings us to the point of after the drinking of the second cup of wine, before making the two brachot on the matzah, the hamotzi and alachilat matzah. The Rambam says, at that point you break a matzah. And without getting into a whole discussion, the Rambam never began with three matzot. He only began with two matzot. And that was the custom of the Vilna Goyim in Yerushalayim, of his students of Yerushalayim as well. And therefore, you actually did not have Lechem Mishnah, because the Rambam was of the opinion that the mitzvah of Lechem Oni, poor man's bread, neutralized the obligation of Lechem Mishnah. The Ashkenazi thinkers thought otherwise and said, we can have both. We can have Lechem Oni, poor man's bread, the broken matzah symbolizing poor man's bread, not a full loaf. And if we start with three matzahs at the outset, you can end up with two matzahs that are whole, and you can have your Lechem Mishnah because it's Yom Tov. But the Rambam didn't believe that. He believed that the mitzvah is made over a matzah and a half, a broken matzah. The bracha is made over a matzah of a chetzi, a matzah and a half, because this is the fulfillment of matzah as Lechem Oni. And in order to show that the matzah is Lechem Oni, the matzah is broken right before the brachot of Hamotzi and Alachilat Matzah is made. In essence, at that moment, we've already concluded the section of Magid. We began with Matchil Bignut. We talked about the downside of Am Yisrael. We talked about the slide, whether it was the spiritual slide, which takes us all the way back to the father of Avraham Avinu. But the Medrash tells us that the days in Egypt was not a spiritual picnic for Am Yisrael either. They talked about Memtet 49 Sharei Tumah in Mitzrayim. And Baruch Hashem, we were redeemed spiritually from that too. When we left Mitzrayim and arrived at Har Sinai for the Torah, we also had a downside that we were politically slaves, enslaved, no rights whatsoever, and we were redeemed from that as well. So the Gemara talks about different types of expressions of Matril Begnut, Mesayim B'Shevach, and now we're at the end of the Haggadah. We've said the Maggid already. We said the bracha for the Geula, Ga'al Yisrael. And at this point, the Rambam says, break the matzah. Because the Rambam is teaching us that there's matzah of redemption as well. So in essence, there's one yachatz, which is the yachatz of enslavement. And we do that, the beginning of the Haggadah. Halach ma'anya, this is the poor man's bread that our forefathers ate in Egypt. The achala avatana ba'ara de Mitzrayim. And then there's another possible yachatz, breaking the matzah, reflecting the geula, the redemption. I love to tell stories of my experiences on airplanes. So here comes one interesting one. I was flying back from the States to Israel after being invited to speak somewhere many years ago. And as it was, I was blessed with a upgrade to business class, which was always very, very nice. And those days, the Boeing 747 Jumbo was still flying, and the business class was the bubble on top for those who have experience sitting in the bubble on top. And lo and behold, sitting next to me, as I get to the seat, is the former dean and now emeritus of Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzhak Lachonon Ritz in Yeshiva University, Rabbi Zvulun Harlap. Sitting down. And what a wonderful time to have a schmooze for 10 hours with Rabbi Harlap, a man who's effervescent in drashot, a seasoned shul rabbi at the Young Israel of Mashula Parkway, a big Talmud Chacham. And this was just, I don't know what was better, the business class seat or sitting next to Rabbi Harlap. But Rabbi Harlap tells me, and that week was Parshat Vayishlach, and he tells me that, you know, I have this great idea. The Yaakov Avinu, when he comes back from the house of Lavan to meet up with his brother Esav in Eretz Yisrael, he divides his family twice. Once at the beginning of the parsha, Vayachatz, and then in the middle of the parsha, when he actually meets up with his brother. And it says again, Vayachatz, the exact same word. And he goes on, Rabbi Harlap goes on to tell me what he thought, you know, this could mean. And I looked at him, and I remember this was in November. It was Parshat Vayishlach. I said, Rabbi Harlap, you just wrote my Shabbos HaGadol drasha for me, right now. He said, why? I said, because there's a dispute between many of the poskim who say that Yachatz is at the beginning of the Seder, and it represents the splitting of the matzah, representing the enslavement. This was the first Vayachatz. It was Yaakov Avinu petrified if he's going to survive the encounter with Esav. So what he does is he splits the family, and he says, Im yavo Esav el machaneh ha'achat vihikahu, v'haya machaneh ha'nishar lifleita. And if Esav succeeds in smiting and beating one part of the family, at least the other part of the family will be able to flee. Which means this was a safety valve. This was somebody who represents the Jew of Galut, who feels that there always has to be a safety valve. We have to know where else we're going to go in the event that we're going to have to leave this particular country. This was the first Yachatz, the Vayachatz of Galut, of exile. But when Yaakov Avinu meets up with Esav later in the parasha, divides the family, Vayachatz, there was a completely different feeling overcoming Yaakov and his family. So much so, Yaakov presents first the Shvachot, Bilhah and Zilpah, with their children. Then he presents Leah and her children. And at the end comes Rachel and Yosef. Binyamin was not yet born. So the Torah should have said, V'achar nigash, Rachel v'Yosef. But the Torah doesn't say that. The Torah says, Va'achar nigash Yosef v'Rachel. Yosef came before the mother Rachel. All the other children came after the mothers, all of them, after Bilhah, Zilpah, and Leah. The mothers and then the children followed. But with regard to Rachel, it says Yosef and then followed by Rachel. And Achachamim tell us that there was an act of defiance at that moment by Yosef. He did not want to have Esav gaze at the beauty of his mother, and therefore defiantly jumped in front of Rachel. And our Chachamim teach us that that act of defiance, which was nothing more than Israeli chutzpah, would go on to teach us that the ultimate downfall of Esav will come about through the progeny of Yosef. And this, Milamed she'ein zar'o shel Esav nimsar, ela ayedei zar'o shel Yosef. And this is borne out by the Haftarah that's read on Shabbat Parshat Vayishlach from the book of Ovadia. And from there we have the beautiful, beautiful prophecy that we say three times a day, finishing any tefillah, V'alu Moshiim Bahar Tzion Lishbot at Har Esav, V'ayta Lashem Hamelucha. Yes, there'll be a downfall of Esav, and the downfall of Esav is going to begin by a gesture, and perhaps more than a gesture, of act of defiance of Am Yisrael. It was Rav Kook at eulogizing none other than Theodor Herzl back in 1904. Rav Kook delivers an unbelievable eulogy comparing Herzl and his works to the spirit of what Chachamim called the Mashiach of Yosef. We don't have much information about what that means, the Messiah of Yosef, as opposed to Mashiach ben David. But it seems to be a forerunner of Mashiach ben David, and it will be a necessary forerunner. And according to Rav Kook, the idea of the spirit of nationalism that had swept over Europe, and that also became part and parcel of part of the Jewish community that leads to the establishment of Medinat Yisrael 1948, Rav Kook saw this in a very, very positive sense as part of the spirit of Mashiach ben Yosef. And ultimately, Am Yisrael perseveres, and hopefully we'll be able to not only talk about the downfall of Esav, which is ipso facto the downfall of Amalek, but Vayital Hashem Hamlucha. There's going to be a coronation. And that crown, no longer associated with a virus, but that crown is going to be the glory of God. You know, the Hasidei Chabad, they have a ceremony in the night of Rosh Hashanah called Leil Hachtara, the night of coronation of God. So you don't have to be a Chosid of Chabad to believe that it is in the Jewish tradition that Am Yisrael, by performing mitzvot, we are acknowledging the presence of God in this world. And that's called Shechina. That is called the resting place of God. So Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us 613 mitzvot. Unfortunately, and I say this again as part of the historic roller coaster effect, from the 613, writes the Chofetz Chaim in the late 19th century, in his Sefer Mitzvot Katzar, an abbreviated manual of how many mitzvot are binding today, he comes up with about 250 commandments, 60 positive and 190 negative. And that's about 35% of the 613. Our Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik taught us that religious Zionism is there to defrost those mitzvot that are in the deep freeze. We have to take them out of the freezer, thaw them out, and begin studying and dealing with them on a practical level as much as possible, halakhically possible. We've made a lot of progress with some of the mitzvot. There are still more sitting in the freezer that have to be taken out and thawed out. God willing, this Leila Seder, which apparently, unless some supernatural miracle occurs in the next 2 weeks, and we believe that even that can happen. But if we just follow the rules of nature, it's going to be a different Seder. It's going to be a quarantine Seder for many. But we are going to be able to exit this Seder and be stronger. We will be able to examine things in the Seder this year that perhaps we never did because there was too much noise and activity around the table. We will take advantage of what Simon and Garfunkel called the sounds of silence. We will take advantage of it. And God willing, we sing the Shana Baba Yerushalayim. It will be Yerushalayim HaBenuya for all of us throughout the world. Chag Sameach to you.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Adler. I don't know if you want to, if you'd be willing to take a couple questions if anybody has, just feel free to speak up, anybody, if they'd like. I want to thank you, and we'll see you, please God, tonight at 8:30, every day at 11 and 8:30, and plus a few extra things. We'll keep you posted as we go along. We keep adding Shirim, of course, moving forward, and let's hope that the blessings are true and we can coronate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kil Hashem Hamlucha Umosho Vagoyim. Okay, good.
Amen. Kol Tov, Rav Kelman.
Okay.
Be well. Take care of yourself. Keep well.
Okay. Amen. Everybody, yes. Thank you.
Okay. And I'll just tell you, if we're on the line, you still with me?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. So my Eitan was upgraded to Dreamliner status. He made one transatlantic flight before he was grounded, and it was to Toronto Pearson Airport.
Right.
So your territory.
Right.
We spoke about it. Well.
And please God, we'll have him over Shabbos one time when he flies in on a Thursday flight.
Right. But, so he's unemployed until end of May. That's the way it looks right now.
Uh-huh,
that's good news already. Yeah, listen, we're taking it in stride. That's all.
Right. How's your other son doing in Efrat?
He actually had corona. Thank you. He got sick. And he's doing better. He's okay. Actually doing better, thank God. Yeah.
Okay, yes, lots of Efrat, I understand. Yeah, a lot of corona in Efrat.
Yeah, now my daughter Hannah might have it also.
Oh boy. Okay. Yeah. Good here. Good news. Besarot Tovot, Refuah Shleimah to everybody.
Amen.
Okay. Okay.
Shalom.